Yo soy Yolanda Santiago Correa.
Yo soy Nora de Arco.
Yo soy Esperanza Jean.
Yo soy Andrés de Arco.
Soy Gessner Josué Pereira Sánchez Otálora Rentería.
Y bienvenidos a Majestad Prieta.
Hello everybody, feliz mayo, bienvenidos a otro episodio de Majestad Prieta, esta vez el último episodio del primer season de nuestra primera temporada. We're so happy that we got to this point. I'm happy to have journeyed through our first season, talking about some of the topics that are most important to us. Today we want to dive into a more personal, deeper topic. Para los que no saben, el mes de mayo is Mental Health Awareness Month, o el mes de la concientización acerca de la salud mental. And we wanted to take the opportunity that this is being celebrated or commemorated to talk about mental health, to talk about what it means for our communities, what it means for us, and how that connects to all of the other topics that we've been talking about throughout the season. Queremos excusar a Esperanza y a Andrés. They are not with us today. And it's interesting that we are talking about mental health, but because it was precisely for that reason that they can't be able to join us. They had previous commitments or are not feeling too well. And we wanted to honor the fact that we're talking about that today to also give them the space, you know, and take the time necessary for them to recuperate. So we send our love to them, and we are excited to have them again with us at the beginning of next season. And so saying that and thinking about where we are today, as Nora, Josue, and I are going to be speaking on this, we thought it was just perfect to dive into this topic of mental health, to talk about what this has meant for our community and the history of mental health for the Latinx community and the Black community. And so to start us off, I want to read off the definition of mental health that, according to mentalhealth.gov, includes our emotional, psychological, and social well-being. Mental health affects how we think, feel, and act. It also helps determine how we handle stress, relate to others, and make choices. Mental health is important in every stage of life, from childhood and adolescence through adulthood. And that's a really interesting definition. We were talking earlier before we started recording about this portion of think, feel, and act, and how that relates to our everyday life and how we operate. And so with that definition in mind, I want us to start this conversation. You know, what is mental health? What has it meant for you, Josue, and for you, Nora? And how do we relate this topic and the fact that we're, you know, celebrating this month of awareness of mental health? How does this connect to what we've been talking about this season?
I don't know, Josue, do you want to start? Do you want me to start? How do you feel?
I think you can start.
Okay. I think it's interesting. I think for me, mental health is a very personal thing. I think I struggle with my own mental. I think we discussed the topic of womanhood and what that means. And I think in the roles that I play as being an older sister, as being a really responsible person, as sometimes Black women feel that, you know, burden of having to be a lot of things for a lot of people, for having to be on for so many things, I have felt strained to my mental, you know, and I think for me that comes out in like this tiredness that doesn't like go away with sleeping, you know what I'm saying? Like it's deeper than what sleep can provide me with. And that's why I'm like, you know what? I work hard so I can live a good life because I'm motherfucking tired, okay? Like, I know my ancestors have worked hard. I have worked hard. But I think it also is for me when you read the definition, Yolanda, and it's like how we think, feel, and act. Like that's everything. You know what I'm saying? For me personally, I think I am a very anxious person, going back to having all of these responsibilities and all these things to do. So my brain works very fast, right? And usually in a lot of worst case scenario instances, right? So I really do have to fight against myself to just be like, no, you know what? Like, it's going to be okay. Like, not being in control or just letting life happen, you're going to be okay. So I think I really struggle with that. And I think somebody said something like, for every negative thought, you need like 5 other like positive thoughts. So it's like to fill yourself back up. I think for me, every day it is a conscious decision that I need to fill myself back up. Like I have to fill myself back up, right? Because I have work to do. So yeah, I think starting there for me, mental health is a very personal thing, because it is something that it is an everyday conscious decision for me to do, you know, to choose me, to choose better, to choose more.
Yeah. I think, thank you, Nora. I think that's a good place, like, to think of mental health as more than just the way that we're feeling at a specific moment is really important. Because I think sometimes we, you know, our culture, our society has like turned mental health into something that's like, you need a mental health day or whatever, right? Which is true. Like all of those things are important, but it's really more about the consistent rhythms, right? And I think that we think of mental health, of improving our mental health, let's call that, as like this sort of like linear kind of path. Like, okay, you do this, and then you do that, and then you do this, and then you should be good. And then you never need to revisit your mental health ever again. And I think that that's actually one of the situations. And I think one of the highlights of the definition and of what Nora mentioned, and I know things that you mentioned, is that it's something that we need to be aware of all of our time. Just like we're never just aware of our, let's call it physical health, to not call it mental health, once in our life, and then that's it, we move on. We continue to tend to it, right? We choose different things to eat as we grow. We choose to eat better. We choose to make different decisions just to make sure that we have a longevity. And I think it's the same with mental health. Because I think that paying attention to mental health is really the thing that has not happened many times in our Latino, Latinx, Latina communities. I think that we pay attention to specific moments, but I think we think like, está pasando por algo, and that's that. And then they'll be fine. But it's really about developing habits, developing practices, developing rhythms that are really going to be able to sustain you for a long time. And not to sustain you, I think, and also not to sustain you just so that you work more, right? I think sometimes there are people who are like, oh, you just need to be sustained to do more work. No, but to sustain you as a whole person so that you're seen. So like, you know, our friends who are not here, it's something we need to prioritize those moments too. Like, you know, and I was glad that, you know, that y'all were like, don't apologize for the way that you need to feel, because it's kind of like something that happens within our culture, that we feel like we have to apologize for taking care of that aspect of ourselves when it's not something that we have to apologize for. I know for a fact that mental health issues or mental health problems often lead to physical problems. And I think that many times, people haven't dealt with, you know, we're dealing with something like, I need to take all these pills for this pain that I'm having. It's also, you could have just dealt with that with, what is the issue? You know, what is the thing that's
the underlying issue? Yeah.
And we know that stress is a physical bodily reaction that happens. Like your body shows when you're stressed out. And so I think those are important things to think about, especially as we think about mental health, to sort of kind of move the narrative from like, you know, oh yeah, take a day. Yeah, take a day. But how developing better rhythms, better systems, better patterns for our life that can sustain us for the rest of our lives, not just for a moment and then we're done and then we come back to it. No, it's, you know, it's forever. So
yeah. Y me gusta esta idea del ritmo, because I think I think we can como que agarrarnos de eso to really dive into this theme, because I think there's this idea of the rhythm of our lives that I think it's predominant in the US, but in the world as a whole, of like a very fast paced rhythm of life. And especially for minoritized communities, it's this idea of we need to be doing a lot all of the time. And especially for those of us that are in environments that are not created for us, whether that is the church, the academy, you know, the your professional space, whatever that looks like. It's this whole idea of yo necesito hacer lo más posible to like compensate and like show that I belong, that I'm worth it, that, you know, the money or the position or whatever is not being wasted on me. And it's and in that mentality we fall into what you were saying, Josue, about like mental health days being just excuses for us to work more and say yes to more things. And that culture of always saying yes. And I think this goes back to like cultura Latina, Latina as a whole, of like, you have to be always in service of people. You know, you always have to be willing to help out. You always have to be willing a dar la mano, because you know, it's not easy for all of us. But then that becomes un ciclo vicioso in which you're always being like, oh, you want to meet to talk? Yeah, let's meet. And you've worked for 10 hours and you've had 3 Zoom meetings. But we are like, oh, whatever, I'm still sitting at home or whatever, I can't do that. So I think this idea of rhythm and how we see the rhythm of our lives is really important, because again, going back to the definition and what Nora was saying, it's this whole thinking, feeling, acting circle. And, you know, like the definition says that this also determines, you know, not only how we relate to us, but how we relate to other people. And so, like, sometimes we don't realize that it's much more important and much more present in who we are day to day than we think it is. And we don't prioritize it because we're like, oh, no, eso son tontería, or like, oh, I'm just being emotional. En el caso de las personas que menstruan, de las mujeres que menstruan, it's like, oh, it's probably my cycle coming, or excuses like that, that we use to not recognize the root problem of what is happening. And again, it can become something physical that, like Nora was saying, you know, it caused trauma, a pain from trauma, you know, it's psychosomatic pain and sickness, que de momento tú estás que no te puedes mover, que no te puedes levantar, and you're like, I'm fine, I don't have a runny nose, my, you know, things like that, you're sort of trying to think, pero no te diste cuenta que es que you've had, you know, 17 meetings in 1 week, or you've been spending 15 hours on a Zoom meeting, or, you know, all these ways in which we exhaust ourselves. Y es entonces ese cansancio que dice Nora, that you can't sleep off. You're just constantly tired and constantly burnt out. But we don't want to recognize that sort of up and down of our lives and that roller coaster, because just culturally, it's not something that's encouraged. You know, it's always work more, you know, this hustle mentality. And you need to work hard to play hard kind of thing.
Yes, yes. I'm so glad we're even having this conversation, because I think sometimes we talk about our mental health and our stress levels and how our bodies are telling us that we're stressed, either by breaking out or shutting down. And we kind of talk about it in such a dismissive way, like, you know, just, oh, it is what it is. But el ritmo, like Jose was saying, like, it's that consistency, right? Like, we have to have that consistency in taking care of ourselves. And we talk about how self-care is part of the work, you know, the work for the self and the work for the wider self, right? It is also part of our duties, you know, to tend to us. And only we as individually, as the experts of our own self, I feel like it is very important. We in this podcast try to dream of something different, of a more empowered person, of a more empowered Afro-Latine, you know, person. it's having that awareness, right? Like, we also have to dive into our emotional, spiritual well-being. We have to be balanced to mm-hmm. to react to and not, I guess, not to be able to, I think I need to correct myself when saying that, because we are people that have gone through a lot. Mm-hmm. We are people who are traumatized, even living in this world. You know, we started this with talking about our mental health, and it's wild because I was just watching the first episode of Atlanta in season 3. My friends, I hadn't watched it in a minute, and my friends were just telling me to watch it, and I watched it, and they were just, you know, breaking down like white supremacy. But it's this, you know, it is this thing that affects us at all levels. And we started this season talking about that and trying to break that down, and how it affects us, because I know it affects like our everyday life, how we think, feel, and how we act. Because if we are getting stressed out by these, you know, feeling of unsafety, right? Mm-hmm. Or feeling unsafe, or feeling threatened, you know, or feeling like we can't fully be, then that slips over into our relationships. And I think that's something that we overthink sometimes when we think about mental health, how it affects others. I know that when I started healing, I saw that my relationship started to change too. Mm-hmm. And we disregard that. So I think it is important that we are taking this time to actually acknowledge this, because I know sometimes I have a lot of talks with my friends on how do I even have this conversation with my family, right? Like, how do I let them know that this is a struggle for me? Because yes, it is affecting the way I show up with you. It is affecting the way I am in the world. So it's so important that we hear this definition, because it is how we think, feel, and act. It is how we are and how we present in this world. And sometimes when we can't communicate with our communities and with our loved ones that, hey, I know that you can't see it, I know that my leg is not broken, but like, this is affecting me. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not the same. I can't even show up. So it's interesting. So I just even creating that space for us to just even discuss this, I think it's
good. And I think this whole role of conversation is important, because I think what you're bringing in terms of the family, lo que dijiste primero of being an older sister, también está la pieza del trauma colectivo, right? And el trauma generacional, which is like scientifically proven that we like physically inherit trauma when we are born from the people that are before. And so like, it's also this role of starting to talk about trauma and it being... so almost like a labor of love, but also can be a source of trauma. And so that, like, that cycle as well of you, like, in terms of the family space, you know, it's not always easy to just sit down and be like, hey, there's collective trauma here, or like, you know, the fact that grandma doesn't want to talk about what happened, or like, we don't know anything about the past, like 20 years before our life or something like that. It's not just because, oh, it's a whim, it's because there's trauma there, but it has become such a stigma to just sit and talk and be vulnerable. I think you had mentioned that, Nora, when we were talking before, this whole role of vulnerability is so hard, and especially cuando traemos eso que tú mencionaste de la supremacía blanca and sort of like expectations of the dominant culture over minoritized communities, it's almost as like you can't let them know that you're weak, like you can't let them know that you're being affected, like you can't let them know that you're sad or that you're tired or that you just woke up today and you looked at your alarm clock and you're like, I don't want to wake up today, I just want to sleep. And it's not that I haven't slept, it's just that I can't. Pero es esta presión de que you can't show it, you can't tell it, you can't
like you always have to be giving. And I think even from for the context of this podcast and some of the work that we do, it's also this thing of like emotional labor, of always having to educate other people, of always having to be like, hey, I'm trying to advocate for me and my people. And it's just constant in this expectation, and how that creates again, this toxic cycle where like our thinking, our feeling, and our acting is constantly warped, and it's constantly like being disoriented by the fact that we just can't say no, or can't say that we're tired, or can't be honest about the fact that, you know, I can only think of my own example. My dad passed unexpectedly almost a year ago, and like, you know, I had no idea that grief was this way. And I had no idea that some days I'm like, cool. And then suddenly, you know, I would look at a toy in a Target section and be like, that reminds me of my dad. And suddenly I want to cry and not move. But like, it's almost been a year. And so for a lot of people, it's like, you should be over this by now. Like, it's been a year, get over it. So it's all of these ideas like grief, like collective trauma, like breakups, like just white supremacy, like there's so many ways that this can look, but it's almost this, yeah, but it's almost this thing where we don't want to acknowledge it, or when we do, it's like Josue was saying, there's this expectation of like linear recovery, and that's almost like an equation. Si te pasa esto, hace esto, and then you're done, and we don't talk about this anymore, and it's healed, and it's perfect, and you need to be happy and not cry or nothing, because there's no reason for you to be that way.
Yeah,
I sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just agreeing, because I was like, no, this is, I want to say, we don't talk about Bruno, like, you know,
yeah, exactly,
all that shit.
Exactly.
So go ahead, Josue, go ahead.
No, all I was gonna say, I think 100%, I think part of the problem, or part of, let's not call it a problem, but let's say part of the problem is that I don't think we understand like that definition that Yolanda read at the beginning, that definition. I think we don't understand that. I think also we don't understand that there are different factors that contribute to our mental health, right? So there was a study that was done about Afro-Latinos and mental health in 2003. That's what I was looking for. And it says like there are these five things that they qualify. They're like, there's everyday discrimination, there's lifetime discrimination, which affects mental health. Then there's recent life events, any lifetime major events, and then any stressors, like they're doing construction in your house, right? Or something that's like something, some stressor, something that's not expected. And I think that if we think of the layers that mental health aspect could be, that affects us, right? The fact that everyday discrimination and lifetime discrimination, I think in their research, they had said it accounts to like 45% of mental health issues amongst Afro-Latinos. Oh, wow. Is a very important marker, because that means that there are some things that we're dealing with that is not from me feeling a certain way, but just from the amount of discrimination that I get through the media, that I get through whatever, that I get through partners. I've definitely been affected by the racial discrimination I've received from partners that I've dated, from women that I've dated that their grandmas have said something very anti-Black that has affected me for a while. Actually, I'm not going to name the name, but there's a very prominent professor of Afro-Latinidad who said that to us at the Afro-Latina Forum, which, you know, I help lead, about that. Like, he spoke about the trauma that a thing happened to him when he was like 15, and how that has informed his work and how he had to deal with that for the rest of his life. This brother's like 60-something, but he's like, that affected me. And I think that, I don't think that we actually recognize and give the space for that, because it does impact us. And in addition, so part of the culture, right? There was a recent report, you know, like a few weeks ago that said like Afro-Latinos, it was May 2nd, that Afro-Latinos, 6 million people identify as Afro-Latinos in the US, as Black Latinos. But there was another report right after by the same people, by the Pew Research Center, that then said like, oh, but Black Latinos also say that they experience much more discrimination, and that causes them to have certain more issues. And I think that we're just, sometimes we don't, I don't know if it's that we don't want to admit that, or we don't want to acknowledge that, or we don't want to give that credence. But I do think that it's important to understand that there are many different factors that can affect us, right? That lifetime discrimination is a thing, like discrimination that we see. And when I see people suffer, that affects me. When certain decisions happen that I hear about, that affects me, even if I'm not directly affected, but I'm affected because it affects people like me and people who are like me. And I think about that all the time. And I do think, to stress it again, I think that it's about making sure that we create rhythms and practices that are going to be able to hold us for longer, right? Because if we're just dealing if we're just responsive, right? So something happened in the block that triggered me, right? Something this, so then yes, we can heal from those things maybe in that way. But how do we deal with the lifetime discrimination mm-hmm. issues that we face as Black people in the US and in our respective countries in Latin America and within Latinidad as a whole? How do we then deal with, you know, how do we deal when we see Black lives not being centered and mattered, when we know that my Black life matters, and how do I center that? How do we center that when we try to parent children, right? Like, how can, I think someone told me, I know a partner, not, I think, I there was a partner, someone I dated, who she said, like, we were dating, it was going okay, and she was unsure what she could date because she was non-Black, and she didn't know if she wanted to bring a Black child into the world. Now, I never asked her to be a mother, but she mentioned that as a thing, like, I don't know if I want to bring a Black child into the world because of the way the world looks like, so I'm just going to go date these other white guys. And those are things that are really interesting, but really true. And also, so it's so layered, I think, when we talk about like mental health disparities and mental health issues. And the fact that we haven't discussed those as a community, I think, is because we don't understand some of the different stresses that can bring about mm-hmm. a mental health situation. Like Yolanda said, my father died almost a year ago too. I remember because Yolanda and I commiserated over that. And that too, like, there's definitely people who are like, it was a year. I'm like, it's been almost a year. I'm like, it doesn't matter. Like, there are times when, yeah, it'll be a random moment. And it's like, oh, this memory comes up. And then I'm like, how can I honor my father's legacy further? Right. And so there's a lot of destigmatization that we have to do. There's a lot of unlearning and relearning of what mental health is that we have to do. I think that's important. Sorry, I know I went long.
No, and being honest, I think also being honest about what that process of learning, unlearning, and relearning is like. So I think Nora mentioned like her path of healing, but what we don't want to recognize is that a lot of the work that we do when we're healing es traer como que la basura vieja para afuera. And it's understanding that maybe lo que tú estás diciendo, Josué, de, you know, lifetime racism, por ejemplo, is to understand that maybe what you lived at 15, when you were 15, you were like, oh, that's funny. And then 5 years later, you're like, hold on, that was not funny. That was racist, or it was sexist, or it was like dismissive, or whatever you want to say it. So es también ese proceso constante of like, when you're learning and when you're growing, it's also really painful to go back and realize what that was. And like being open to that is not always as easy, but it's constantly affecting us. But we don't want to recognize it because sometimes it's this whole idea of like, you know, el pasado, ya lo pasado, pasado, y no me interesa. And we don't want to talk about like, you know, those experiences either. And we want to just say, oh, it was, sorry, because we were immature, or eso es el pasado, or they didn't mean it that way, or whatever, because it's a painful process. And I think that the role of pain, and especially for the Black Latinx community, how pain has always been sort of like this constant thing, not only individually and collectively, but like historically, it's such a history filled with so much pain that we almost want to run away and be like, oh, estamos bien. Tú sabes, tipo Bad Bunny, nos sobran los billetes de 100, everything is fine. But the reality is that it's not. But it's such a hard place to be, and it's such a hard thing to do, especially because, like we have been mentioning, there is a stigma, you know, there is this idea of the, we mentioned before, the strong Black woman, or like el que produce para su casa, or like el estudiante that's first generation and is doing something that his family or their family have never done before, or todo the tropes that almost force us or require of us to be the semblance of perfection and achievements and you know, joy, without leaving space for pain or for saying no or for saying, you know what, I don't feel like it. And it re-traumatizes us, because then those expectations that are external become our own, and then we are putting it on ourselves, and we are crying over, you know, I think about my own experience, crying over B minuses and being like, no, I can't have a B, it needs to be an A plus, or things like that seem really dumb, but that come from a deeper, like much more important root of what we're ignoring, of what our families are ignoring, and that, like you said, come out, not only in our personal lives, but like in how we relate to partners, or how we like deal with children, not only our own children, but like nieces and nephews, and like, do you know, future generations of our families and things like that. But it's hard. And I think that's what always gives us stop, because we don't want to recognize the complications and como que todas las partes de eso. And I think for me, what I always bring up in my experience is that there's a religious component here that also does that, you know, this whole idea of like, you know, a large portion of the Latine community is Christian or has some sort of religious Christian belief. And it's always this idea of like, you know, if you're with God, you're in victory. Estamos en victoria, estamos bien, and everything's going to be great. Y lo que pasó, it happens for a reason. And, you know, all of these trivial ways of minimizing the effect of trauma and the effect of, you know, life altering events. And I think all of these connect to create this sort of aversion that we have to talking about mental health and the fact that we're tired and exhausted and over it, you know, and we don't want to do anymore, you know, and COVID and all of these other things as well that we haven't mentioned, but that also work to this, like they're overwhelming us. Y es como un peso constante, pero nadie quiere, porque we're all, you know, moving forward, we're estamos bien, estamos en victoria, everything is fine.
Can I this might be a hot take, can I just, or whatever kind of take, but I actually,
no, go ahead.
I actually think, just to go back on something that you just said, I actually think that there is, I remember growing up with in the church context, and for any listeners, when we talk Christianity, we mean Catholics and Christians, the entire gamut of
Protestants,
Catholics and Protestants, which some people just call Christians, but it's the whole gamut. There's Orthodox, mm-hmm. there's all that, but I grew up in the Pentecostal church, as you both know, and I remember there were songs that actually talked about not being well and making sure that was normalized. Like so maybe this is a hot. I feel like there was a time when that was discussed. My uninformed hypothesis is that the more that evangelical Christianity started veering closer to whiteness is when that started to come. Because I remember some coritos that would be like, I'm not doing well. And but I
even,
need help.
And no,
I
remember, and yeah. But even
and
like
I remember
that,
I remember another song that said, like, it's easy to praise God when you're doing well. But now have to talk. I remember these and I was just saying to someone, I was like, I think there was a time when that was, when we were more honest about them. Sorry, go ahead, Yola.
No, but even in that, and I see, you know, alabar a Dios cuando las cosas te salen bien, que bueno es. I know exactly what you're talking about. Yes. But even in that, I think there's a really important thing to say about the whole thing of not being okay, being connected to only asking for God's help. Because I think that, and there's something that I've been seeing, especially in religious movements, it's this whole idea of like, you can have Jesus and therapy too. And I think that's a portion of this that I often think about when I'm thinking about the particular context of the church, where it's like, yes, you know, it's almost this thing of like, we can recognize that we are not okay in front of God, but we cannot recognize in front of our peers that we're not okay. And that, you know, because something I was talking about with somebody today about that, you know, depression is a chemical imbalance in your brain. You know, it's not just, ay, estoy triste and I'm so sad y mañana se me va. Like, there's a physical medical component to a lot of these things that like, especially in the church context, it's like, si tú no estás bien, you go and you pray, but you don't tell anybody else that you're not feeling okay.
That's
and so
true.
I think,
that's true.
Like, yes, I agree with you, but I think also there's a component there where we need to realize that, and I think this extends outside of the church to just the familiar context in general. You know, it's not that I'm trying to be mean. It's not that I'm not trying to see you. It's just that, you know, si, por ejemplo, yo pienso en todos los niños que tienen diagnóstico de ADHD, you know, o que tienen inatención. It's not that that kid doesn't want to listen to you. It's that they're literally, physically, like, it's impossible for them to pay attention because there's, like, things or other things happening. So, do you get what I mean? Like there's a mm-hmm. physical, chemical yes. component, yes. especially to mental illness or like diagnosis, like depression or bipolar disorder or dissociative identity disorder or ADHD, you know, all these things, that it's not just a matter of going to church, and it's not just a matter of like, you know, you'll be okay tomorrow, it's just a season. It's a matter of, again, rhythm. It's a matter of, you know, if you're a religious person, mm-hmm. attending to your religious, but also going to a doctor or to a therapist. It's also like sitting down and having the conversations of where this is coming from, what can I do. It's like there's so much, right? And it's a whole structure mm-hmm. that I feel like we go back again to this whole idea of the fear of being vulnerable and recognizing that, yes, you know, we need help or we need rest or we need to just say no.
Yeah. And I think one of the parts that you and Josue brought up was talking about grief, right? And we talk about how this affects how it is, how their feelings and as well as how one is able to show up, right? And you talk about this component of like having a layered approach or more holistic approach to healing, right? It's not just like, yes, I am going to pray, but I am also going to look for my medical help that I need, whether that is my therapist or like what, like other things that I need, right? Like, I know that when I experience lows, like I have certain things that I have to do to help me feel better, right? Like I have to go outside, even though outside feels like the hardest thing in the world for me to get to, mm-hmm. but it helps me, right? And I have to eat and I have to drink water because honestly, I don't know if I ate or maybe I overate that day. Like it doesn't, you know what I'm saying? Like I have mm-hmm. to make sure, like, so it is a more, it is more complex. And the fact that you also bring up the fact that sometimes it is an imbalance, right? Sometimes we do need a little bit more, and how, and how that helps us, because as a community, that is not to say that we are victims, but as a people that have endured so much, there is a lot of grief that mm-hmm. happens and a lot of unresolved grief that then shows up as different things, right? Because there is also an expectation that we don't have time to be not together. Mm. We got shit to do. That is one of the things about you know, having to be on all the time, is that you don't have time to deal with your shit. You don't yeah. have time to deal with the times that you are not like all the way together, and you don't have time, especially in this country that requires us to be so on and on and on and on mm-hmm. and on. Sometimes we don't have time to just get it together again or come back to center again. And it is other people, as you have said, Yolanda, expect us or put that on us to like, okay, pero I put a timeline on your healing. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of timelines that are placed upon us that then we're like, okay, well, I guess I have to meet that. Like, I guess that. So it's like a pressure cooker, you know, like si uno cocina frijoles, you know, lentejas, like, you know, una pitadora. Is that what it's called? See, I don't be cooking like that, to be honest. Like, let me be really honest.
I was just about to say, I can't help you there. I'm not a good cook. No, I know what it is. I just don't
use pero it. Pero isn't it called a pitadora?
Sí, porque pita. Okay. Yeah.
Uh-huh. So, pero, you know, if you don't do it right, like it can actually blow up because it is actually a pressure cooker. And I feel it, like with us as well, like for me personally, I'm a person that keeps it in often, and because I keep it in so often, sometimes I have times where I just blow up because it's not just one thing, it's many things that have topped on top of each other until I am no longer able to act or feel like myself.
Y lo y la cosa de eso, Nora, que me da hasta risa es que a veces, like, that last thing before you explode is the dumbest thing you can ever think about. Like, se me venía a la mente el ejemplo de cuando tú estás como frustrado y estás en ese corre y corre y de momento se te encaja lo de la lo del cinturón del pantalón, lo de la correa del pantalón en una puerta, or something like tonto, o sabes, una tontería, y de la nada es como que todo sale como un volcán, y suddenly you're crying, or you're punching things, or angry, pero es precisamente porque es lo que tú decías, es una olla de presión, que si tú no le vacías la presión, like, it's not gonna work, pero no solo nosotros, sino todo el sistema no crea espacios para tú poder hacer eso, you know, when you're trying to work a full-time job and pay the rent that keeps, you know, raising with this inflation, tú sabes, yo me voy a las tantas de la mañana a mi trabajo, and whether you're working outside of your home or not, you're working, let's say, until 5, 6, 7 p.m. y de la nada tienes que comer porque no has comido todo el día, and then suddenly you're exhausted y te tienes que acostar a dormir, and then you want to do it again the next day, and then, you know, that's not considering if you have children or a partner, if you want to meet your friends, or if you're a student and have deadlines to meet, or if you're a director and have deadlines to meet, you know, or if you're a pastor and have to preach on Sunday, or todas las maneras en que esto se puede ver. Que no, like, there's no space for us to do it, there's not no space for us to liberate that, and then we're just constantly pressure cookers exploding at different times without the ability to even try to see each other, porque es como que mira, yo en verdad no tengo break ni de bregar contigo porque yo me estoy muriendo por dentro, so a mí no me vengas con esa guasa porque no estoy para ti, right? And so es como que it creates this toxicity. There's no other way to say it. Porque entonces we are literally unable to function properly, and we're just like máquina automatizada. We're becoming and behaving como máquinas that just repeat tasks to the point where the things that bring us joy don't bring us joy anymore, and it's just una obligación más que cumplir, so we're never getting rest, we're never celebrating, and it's just constantly sadness and trauma and anger hasta que se te cae una bolsa de papita, and then suddenly you're wanting to, you know, run over somebody in the middle of the street. I know that I have road rage, a lot of it, so and that's a way that expresses as well, you know, and so it damages our survival. And it damages the ability that we have to create that healing and to really advocate for us, especially because when we do, then it's seen as weak or lazy, or like you're just trying to get away with not doing what you need to do.
Yes. That's in the Matrix, which on the second one, the Merovingian is a character. And he says a line that I always remember. He says, if we never take time, how can you ever have time? Because someone's like, I don't have time. And he's like, well, you know, it takes time. How do you have time? Mm-hmm. And he laughs it off. And I thought that was a really profound statement because it informs a lot, like, especially to that discussion of taking time to really assess. I think sometimes when we need to take assessments of ourselves, I think we need to deal with what internalized things create this pressure cooker idea within me, right? We have internalized narratives that we don't know that we have, that we grew up and that's what we have. So we have an internalized narrative of, you know, that you have to overcome. We have you know, within, you know, as we spoke in the issue about masculinity, there's internalized masculinity narratives that I know I often have to kick to the side in my own head. Like, oh, you have to do this. So sometimes when I'm sick or when some part of me is not feeling well, there's a part of me that's like, man, that's something small. You could deal with that better. And then I have to check that and be like, actually, no.
That hustle mentality, it's bad.
They call it grind culture, right?
Uh-huh.
And it's just that mentality, you know, and we all have different internalized narratives that come from either our families or come from our churches. You know, I grew up, you know, I've been preaching since I was really young, as I've shared with both of you many times. And there's a lot of internalized narratives with that, like that at least I've been able to at least notice. And I think that's the step. I think sometimes people think like you know, this linear thing that I was mentioning. It's just because I've seen it a lot that there are people that think like dealing with grief is linear, dealing with a breakup is linear. None of that is linear. Like some of that can be verse or coitus, I don't know how, that's the wrong way of the, circular. Okay. I know I said a word. Mira, perdón. I didn't mean to say that.
Es redondo, es circular. Esférico. No, but eso, and it's also,
what I meant to say,
yeah,
just,
go ahead.
No, just real quickly, and to wrap, it's just, I know that people think that is this thing, but even just recognizing that you have a pressure cooker, like I think sometimes I always tell my friends to like, those are good steps. Like, you know, recognizing that a trigger, you know what, this triggered me. That's a good, that's real growth, because then, you know, like, oh, okay. Now, how can I handle myself around that? How I know that this thing triggered. I did an event and there was someone who I had a falling out with there. That person triggers me sometimes. And I knew that. So going into it, I kind of prepped and was made sure. And then that interaction went better than it would have gone had I not realized that that is a trigger, right? Like, so I think those little steps, I think, are good. Sorry, Yolanda.
No, and it's, but it's also a matter, and I think this is something, you know, it's important to recognize it and it's important to talk about it. But I think it's also important to recognize our limitations, yeah, which is also something that we often don't do, which is like, you know, si yo sé que me da coraje, and I know that I'm not in a place to deal with it right now. Avoidance is also a good, you know, method. A veces es como que, not right now. I can't right now. And the idea of no. And I think that's the one that I struggle with the most. Porque yo soy mala para decir que no, mala. Because this whole idea of like climbing, I mean, pulling as we climb or helping as we climb and all these things, like, yo no le puedo decir que no, porque hay gente que me ayudó a mí, yo tengo que ayudar a toda la gente que puedo. But like, we're also not realizing that. And so it's also like, sometimes you can work and deal with it presently. And sometimes you just have to avoid and say no. And that's also okay. And so sort of the idea of giving ourselves the space to see all of the ways that that can look like, because again, healing is also not the same for everybody. You know, it doesn't take the same time for everybody. We don't all have the same emotional or physical reactions. There's so many levels to this. And so I think going back to that definition of like, how do we handle stress? How do we think? How do we feel? How do we act? It's important to just recognize that and recognize que un círculo, that things that of the past might bring, and they might come up in a moment that you don't expect, that even if talking about the example of a breakup, it might have been 3 years and suddenly you're reminded of something and you're like, wait, hay una espina ahí que todavía no me sacaba and I thought it was over. Or like, you know, with grief of losing a parent or a family member, or even with the grief of like, ¿sabes? Mi experiencia de escribir esta disertación, I'm learning things de la historia de Puerto Rico that I didn't know. And there's grief in that too, that as we're learning, it's like, diantre, yo no sabía. And like, you know, there's the pain of like people and friends and other things, and you feel it as well. So I think recognizing all of those complexities, it's definitely what you were saying, Josue, is the start of going through that process of actual healing.
And I think that's why it's important to talk to therapists. Like, I think that's what we in the Latino and Afro-Latinx communities, we need to really emphasize that talking to a therapist is really important. There are a lot of, that helps. And I know that there are a lot of friends that I have that I've told, like, you need to talk to someone. Mm-hmm. And other than me, because I can't give you the perspective, and not I'm not a trained therapist.
Yes.
And I've spoken to some monks who've told me that, who were like, you know, when I was searching, they were like, yeah, we can help you here, but you need a therapist. And I think that actually explains some popular movies. Like, I think there are a lot of, you know, movies where like the title character just needs some therapy. Like, just go talk it out with someone.
Even when Nora was saying we don't talk about Bruno, you know, Encanto, even Turning Red, which recently came out, it's this whole idea of like, bro, we need to talk about this and we need to actually like look for help. Like, it's definitely something that needs to happen.
Like, if you look at most of the major villains in Marvel, other than maybe Thanos, all of them just need some therapy. Like, just go talk to someone. Actually, some of the heroes need therapy. Yep. Go talk to someone deal with that. Oh, you're feeling better? Okay. Then, you know, sorry, go ahead, Nora.
No, I was saying like it helps us. And I love the picture of therapy as like helping unravel our thoughts and like helping unravel our feelings, because that's all it is, like helping us make sense of something that maybe we have jumbled up inside our minds or inside our hearts. And it feels and it is very real for us, but it causes us strain. So how do we deal? I think it is important, I think, for our people to have like our care backpacks, you know, like, okay, when I am feeling like this, I know I need this, this and that. And sometimes, like you were saying, we don't recognize our triggers. And because we don't recognize our triggers, we don't even know how to take care of ourselves. Mm-hmm. So we don't even know what we need to get better. And so we come and then we bring other children into this world. And this is what we do because this is what we recognize. And this is, you know, this is our normal. But what would it look like for us to really like take care of ourselves and to really be able to reach our fullest potential? Because I know like I definitely go to therapy and I have found it to be very helpful for me to take that space to deal, to really talk to and deal with even just my migration story. Like that I was 6 years old, but at this age, there's still some trauma associated with that that I needed to deal with. And it came in my actions, right? Like I was always really worried about safety. Like you would not catch me slipping, like not locking my door, like not turning my blinds when it was dark outside, like being very careful with my location, all of that stuff. But that stems from a deeper place. And it has also grown to cause me anxiety and feelings of just not being safe, right? And mm-hmm. So like, how do I deal with that? And how do I live a better life, right? Like a life where I feel more safe within myself, within my home, within the spaces that I inhabit. Because I feel like if I am able to have those basic needs met, then I am able to reach for more. Then mm-hmm. I am able to dream wider. Yeah, then I am able to, you know what I'm saying? But when I am not able to think, act, and feel like my best self, then I spend energy on just trying to level myself off, just trying to feel mm-hmm. okay and just trying to function. But there's so much more that I can contribute than my survival. Right. And mm-hmm. this is when we get into thriving, and thriving comes with healing ourselves, and thriving comes with doing that very difficult work of sitting with ourselves, the good, the bad, and the ugly. That's not easy mm-mm. at all. It's mm-mm. not. And, you know, there's a lot of things that we do to escape from it, to not feel it. And it also holds our superpowers in our way, right? Mm-hmm. Like, but it is something like we are saying, like Jose, you were saying, it is okay. It is okay to find somebody else to help you go through these very complicated emotions. I know that there are some that I thought about. I'm like, you know what? I think I'm going to reserve that for my therapist. Like I need a little bit of help walking through these very complicated we have mentioned something over and over again in this episode, it is that it is complex, right? Mm-hmm. Like it is not just black or white. It is more gray. It is layered. It is more nuanced. Like it is, there's different things that affect us, that affect our well-being, that mm-hmm. affect how we show up with ourselves, that affect how we show up with others. So it is something that we need to be more intentional about and really take serious. Like I think sometimes because we can't physically see it, it's easier to ignore. Mm-hmm. But it's like it's very vivid in our own minds. It's just that other people can't see our own little perspective, little imagination going on.
No, and even in that, Nora, and I'm glad that you transitioned into this portion of like dreaming of el un día, like what would it look like? Because I think what also makes me think about is like, yes, therapy is important and finding professional help is important, but also what would it look like for us to build structures in our relationships and in our communities and in the work that we do for some of that to happen? Because I think also the reality on the other side of this is that therapy is very inaccessible, and there's sometimes that we cannot, you know, afford to pay for a psychologist or a therapist. And, you know, there's a level of help or like assistance that can be given by a professional that can't be given by us to our friends. But also in that same mind, you know, what would it look like for our communities to build that space for people to be vulnerable, and maybe not necessarily us give, you know, therapeutic or help to our friends, but to be able to give the space for them to be like, you know what, I kind of don't want to talk right now because I'm not feeling to it. You know, what would it be like for us to adopt practices like being like, hey, I really don't have anybody to talk to and I really want to dump right now, but I want to make sure that you're in a space where you can listen to my pain without me causing you pain. So like, what would it look like for us to adopt behaviors in nuestro día a día que también consideran el estado mental y la salud mental de nuestros compañeros, de nuestras compañeras, de nuestros familiares, tú sabes, of our peers. And how do we start to create an environment that fosters sort of that holistic health and that space to where we can recognize signs, even if they're not una pata rota o sangre, you know? How do we start striving for that health as a community and as a whole, where as we create those spaces for ourselves, we also create it for the people who we are in relationship with constantly?
I think, no, that is actually where we need to get, like, the idea is how can we help create those structures and these systems and also be gentle with our own friends and people that we know that need those support. Like I said, like, I've spoken to some friends and been like, you need therapy, but it sounds colder. It's done in a much warmer tone when I do it because that's important. It's also, you know, sometimes we have to help people recognize by our own vulnerability, people then become vulnerable themselves and not share this. Like so I'm an associate pastor in a congregation. And I remember, I mentioned it to y'all, but I remember a sermon where I was like, yeah, you know what? I was struggling because I went through this depressive period for this time. And that's why I wasn't preaching or speaking or anything for a while. And I was just kind of in the background. And I remember that a lot of people then came up after and were like, you know what, I'm going through this too. I'm going through this. And because of that, they saw help. Like, I think sometimes if we present this kind of too stoic, you know, like I have it all together and I never go through stuff, then people will not feel like they can be vulnerable with us, which is why it really shocks me in Christian circles that people don't like recognize that Jesus had very moments of like needing help. Like Jesus literally asked his friends, can you please come with me? I don't want to be by myself when I'm praying. Like that's a very, you know, moment of transparency. Like I don't want to be alone here. And that moment should, you know, but in Christianity, we have turned the idea that like, you know, mental health is not a thing, but there are many times where you see in scriptures, like Jesus actually is like his cousin that he's like, I don't want to be around people. Because I can't, those emotions are raw. Like there's things that are raw. I think the more that we become more vulnerable with friends, with people, with ourselves, I think discussing it more openly helps other people to discuss that. Like I've discussed those things with friends and even with my family. Like I was the one who discussed certain things with my family. Like I brought my father and my mom and my sister and people together to be like, hey, here's what I'm going through right now. And let me tell you this, because they were just seeing me and they were like, you should be okay. And I was like, no, let me tell you what's happening. And those conversations help. And I think that is one of the ways that we can start to create these structures and systems, right? To be vulnerable. And vulnerable is tough. And you can't be vulnerable to everyone. You shouldn't just go with anyone and be vulnerable. But if you choose the people to be vulnerable, and if you're willing to be vulnerable, you don't have to do, that's also really difficult to do. Mm-hmm. Vulnerability exposes you, but if you're willing to do that, that I think can sometimes bridge the gap of like people understanding that.
Yeah, and I think it ultimately goes to darnos el permiso a vivir as our whole selves, and that mm-hmm. also including the fact that we're not always okay and that that's okay. Yo creo que algo que hemos hablado en este season, y creo que es la manera perfecta para terminar e irnos on break hasta el otro season, es decir, es importante reconocer nuestra humanidad y reconocer the fullness of who we are, y en eso dar permiso a otra gente para también, you know, be their full selves, be who they are, and in that recognize both their strengths and the places where they need help or they need healing. And this doesn't have to do with, you know, religion or anything like that. It just has to do with this endless commitment to allow, you know, people to be and thrive. You know, I think this idea of thriving, que Nora estaba diciendo, nosotros queremos imaginar y que nuestra imaginación esto un día nosotros no solo sea una sección hipotética de una conversación, sino que sea like our striving toward a reality where we can all sort of lean into that thriving. And that has to do with vulnerability, and it has to do with bravery, and it has to do with hard work. But I think it starts with recognition, and I think we've talked about that a lot. It starts with being honest about where we are and about what we're missing and about the realities that surround us. And that might lead to individual healing or communal healing, and might lead to something like this where we're calling things out in a public matter. But it might look like a conversation over a table with your mother and your, you know, siblings. So this might look different ways, but I think the first step is to recognize it. And if there's something that we want to encourage, I think what this first season is, let's start those conversations. And then let's dar ese primer paso a hablar y a ser honesto y a usar nuestro vocabulario, sea académico, sea callejero, sea como sea que se vea, you know, start and allow ourselves to do that. And begin that process towards that healing and towards realizing that un día that we have been dreaming about. Y con eso en mente, and with that in the conversation, as we prepare to sort of close the season and this episode, one of the things that we wanted to share is that if you or a loved one or somebody that you know needs professional help or needs somebody to talk to, there are certain resources out there that you can access immediately. One of them being, or the most popular one being, the crisis hotline. There's a national number, 1-800-273-8255 in English, or 1-888-628-9454 in Espanol, where you can talk to somebody 24 hours of the day, 365 days of the year. You can also text if you don't like talking. Just text the word hello, H-E-L-L-O, to number 741-741, so that's 741 twice, and you can talk to somebody if that's something that you need, and just know that what we are doing here is just modeling what we are dreaming about in this future. And we hope that this conversation starts that same for you. And if you're already in your journey for healing, que esta conversación sea una manera de apoyarte, of encouraging you. And we hope that this season has been fruitful, that it has inspired you to think, to talk to your people, to rant, to celebrate, to be angry, whatever that looks like for you. Thank you so much for your support. Shout out to all of the countries: Alemania, Austria, Puerto Rico, Colombia, Mexico, Peru, the United States, that have been listening to us. We are so happy with what we have done, and we are so excited about what the second season is going to look like. So we'll be in a hiatus for the summer, and then we'll be coming back around August of September with the beginning of season two. Así que stay tuned to our social media, at Majestad Prieta Pod, to our online page, maestraprieta.com. .com. We each are linked there, so you can also look at our individual social medias. And yeah, thank you so much for the first season, Josué and Nora. No sé si se quieren despedir.
Thanks for rocking with us, y'all.
Yeah, I wanted to say thank you. Also, Mayo 21 es el día de la Afrocolombianidad, so May You know, we always highlight something. May 21 is Afro-Colombian Day. It's a recognized day in Colombia. So for those of you out there, que celebren. And yeah, y gracias a todos.
Feliz. Josué is wearing a very cool Colombian shirt today. Awesome. We gotta give it to Josué.
Eso, okay. Colombia. Celebramos con ustedes. Y de nuevo, muchísimas gracias por todo su apoyo en el primer season. Y nos vemos de nuevo en el otoño. Bye-bye.
Bye. Ciao.